Hello, and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me, as always, is Jason.
Hey, buddy.
How's it going?
Good.
How you doing?
Good. I thought you were doing like a Price is Right type thing there.
I don't know what I was
doing. With me, as always, is Jason.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me, as always, is Jason. Is that better?
That's terrible. Don't do that ever again.
That's your voice.
No. Okay. So yeah, but how have you been? Because it's been a couple weeks since we've hung out. Like
two
at
or
all.
3 weeks. Yeah, I've been great. I've been on vacation.
Break.
Yeah. I've been out of commission here for the last week. It was 4th of July. I don't know if you knew that.
I was aware.
Yeah, Independence Day.
I was told my face was melting, so there was that.
Yeah, it was hot. Yep. It was hot. It was also our nation's birthday, and we Americans like to celebrate by blowing things up.
Yes, in the tradition of our forefathers,
right?
We like to blow things up.
With big explosions. Yeah, I had a fantastic week. It was super, super ultra hot and terrible the whole time, but it was great anyway. Every year for the 4th of July, we have a big party for our family, and this year was the biggest one yet. We had family from California and Indiana and Illinois and North Carolina all coming to visit, all spread out across the week, and we had a great time. It was super fun.
That's awesome.
I have a horrible sunburn, and
you still look pale.
Oh, thanks.
I'm serious.
Yeah, well, no, I was bronzed for about a day and a half, and then that faded.
And then you became pale again.
Right, but my shoulders, they got blistered even. That's how bad it was.
They make this stuff called suntan lotion?
Yeah, well, you know, my dad lives on a lake, and so when you get in the water, that washes off.
Dude, I saw the banana boat commercials. It's not true. Just saying. You know what I did for the 4th of July?
What'd you do?
I shot Roman candles out of a car jack.
Out of a car jack?
Yeah, like the tube for a car jack.
Uh-huh.
Just threw some Roman candle pipes in there and shot those into a cornfield because it was the least dry thing we could find.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
We didn't want to start any fires.
No.
And then some old lady told us to stop. So she said, "Did you know it's illegal to shoot fireworks today?" I said, "Ma'am, I think you're mistaken." And she said, "Well, you have neighbors and they'll call the police." And I thought, no one here lives here. Like, there were three of us, and none of us lived at that house, so.
Yeah. You have neighbors. Well, they're not my neighbors. Yeah.
My neighbors are cool. And they live 40 miles from here. So, anyways. So, that's been fun. I brought a ridiculous beer tonight. It's not that good.
Yeah?
It's called Gulden Drake. G-U-L-D-E-N. Yeah, I'm wondering if it's supposed to be Golden Drake, but it's like German.
It's probably...
No, Belgium.
Belgian for Golden Dragon, yeah. Would be my guess.
Yeah. I have a friend in Belgium. I should ask him.
You have a Belgian friend?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
He's a film composer. He's awesome.
He?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Robin Scott Fleming, good guy.
Yeah, so, right on. Yeah, you should ask him.
I will ask him what that means. Uh-huh. He'll probably laugh at me and be like, "Silly American."
Is that the Belgian accent? Silly American.
That's exactly how I sound. Yeah. So that's not the accent I did, but anyway, so it's kind of ridiculous, but it's not that great, but the bottle is really cool, so I'll put a link to it on the site.
Okay. So it doesn't taste very good?
I mean, it's not terrible. It's an ale.
Okay.
It's going to be like dragon urine. I'm not sure.
Well, you had dragon milk a couple weeks ago, didn't you?
That was super good, though. Well, dragon's milk is awesome. So.
Yeah. This is dragon pee.
Yes. So anyways, there's that.
I'm drinking Shock Top Raspberry Wheat because we have a brewery, a local brewery here in town, Old Peninsula Brew Pub.
Yes.
And they make an excellent raspberry wheat beer. And I was at a party several months ago and somebody had Shock Top Raspberry Wheat, and it's the first time I've seen a raspberry-ish flavored beer for sale somewhere.
Other than
at that place, and at that restaurant, you can only get their beer in their restaurant.
Oh, they didn't have like growlers to go.
They might have growlers to go, but I don't think I had like that.
I like growlers. We're going camping this weekend.
Yeah,
and we're swinging through Ludington out of the way, so that I can fill my growler at the Jamesport Brewing Company.
Right on.
They make that Scottish Strong Ale that we had at one time.
Okay,
it's good stuff.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
So, hey, what you been playing lately?
Oh, dude, I've been playing a lot I've been playing a lot. It, surprisingly, I mean, we spent the week on the lake in my dad's house, and we still got a lot of games in. I was surprised. I didn't expect to. But I have my cousin who came up from North Carolina. He's a game player himself. And he brought a couple things with him. Of course, we played another Games of Cards Against Humanity, and we had 12 people. No, excuse me. We had 13 people in that at the same time.
Wow.
It was huge, and it was awesome. Let me talk about that for a second, actually. Cards Against Humanity. I'm actually getting a little bored with the game, to be honest with you. I've played it 4 times in the last 3 weeks. That's too much.
Yeah.
That's too much Cards Against Humanity, because I remember what all the cards are now, and they're not all that funny anymore.
Right.
But
what
is still fun is every time I've played it with a new group of people. I mean, my wife has been with me every time, but everybody else in the game has been different every time.
Right.
So it's fun to see how a new group reacts.
That is nice. And it's nice because, like, Cards Against Humanity, obviously there's not much of a learning curve.
No, right.
So it's not like, oh, we have to teach these new people to play this game. I mean, they just step right into it. So they're utterly shocked. Like, when you showed me the cards, and I was like, oh!
Yeah. And it's also funny, because there's a lot of vulgar stuff in there, and a lot of just weird stuff. And it's funny to see, you know, one crowd will think card A is the funniest thing, and everybody will be laughing so hard that they're crying, they can't breathe. And then you get to the next group, and that same card is like, okay. It's just a minor chuckle, and something else entirely just gets everybody going, and it's nonsense. And it's been interesting to think about that in terms of the different kind of people seeing these cards for the first time. So that's been entertaining for me. I've enjoyed that. That said, though, I think I'm going to take a step back before I play it again.
Yeah.
I want to give it some more time.
I think every game. I mean, I can't think of a single game that I don't get tired of if I play too much.
Right. Yeah. So in addition to that, I played a game of Formula D.
Yeah.
Which I still like that a lot. But I still have that same problem with getting enough people together who want to play it. It's you can play it 2 or 3 or 4 player, but it's just not as good. You need 6 or 8 people at least for that game to really be fun, to get a lot of cars out on the racetrack. Plus, the first lap of that game, when you're first lap around the track, the new people are all still learning the game for the first time, and so they're doing a bunch of stupid stuff and getting a lot of damage to their engine. So once they get around a full lap, they understand then how the game works, but then their car is too wrecked to make it through a second lap, much less a third or a fourth lap game. You know, so you kind of either start over or you go, okay, that was cool, let's do something else now. So that's kind of a bummer. So Formula D is going to be good once I can get a group of people together who have played it before and are willing to play it again and willing to play a long game, not just one lap around the track, because that's when the game is really good. So played that a little bit. We played a game of Small World, which we've already talked about before, so I don't need to get into that, but still great. We played a game of Quarriers. I don't think I've talked about that on the show.
No, I've played Quarriors with you before.
Yeah.
Right? That was what we played at Gen Con?
Yeah.
With like 10 million tiles?
No, it's Dice.
Dice. Oh, Dice, yes.
Yeah, the dice building game. I don't want to talk about Quarriors today. I can talk about that another time because I own that and it's fun. I like it a lot, but there's a couple other games I want to talk about more.
Sure. What else you got?
The two games that my cousin brought up from North Carolina were Lost Cities and Dominion. And I'll talk about Lost Cities first. Lost Cities, it's a two-player game only, which was a nice surprise. And it's a card game, and what you're doing is you are each some kind of intrepid explorer that's going to go on an expedition to explore Lost Cities and find artifacts and gain wealth and treasure and stuff from these adventures, okay? So the deck, you're enjoying that beer more?
It's getting better. I mean, it's 10.5% alcohol by volume, so...
So every...
It's bound to get better.
Yeah. Every sip gets better, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. In one game, you can go on 5 adventures. So there's a red adventure, a yellow adventure, a blue adventure, a green adventure, and a white adventure, all right? For lack of any other terms, those are just the colors that are assigned to those adventures, okay? And each adventure has cards numbered 1 through 10, okay? And then they have some hand-shaped cards, which give you multipliers to your total score. You start with a random bunch of cards in your hand, and you're playing these cards out on kind of a board, on the table. And the board isn't necessary, it just kind of helps you keep organized. We've talked about that kind of idea before,
right.
too.
Yep. Yeah.
And so what you're doing is you're getting these cards and you're trying to play cards on the table in front of you in order. So you're gonna start this adventure by laying down cards numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay? So if you lay down a 1, you can lay down a 2, or you can lay down a 3, or you can lay down any number higher than that.
Okay.
Okay? But if you lay down a 1 and then a 4, you can't go back and put down a 2 or 3. Right?
Oh,
You've already skipped a 4. Right?
Right.
Okay, easy enough. And so once you get up to 10, that adventure is over. That adventure has ended.
Okay.
Likewise, if you're going to play any multipliers, the handshake cards that give you a multiplier to your score, you have to play those before you lay down the 1. Or I guess it starts with 2, forgive me.
Okay, so you're kind of setting up, like, I'm going to try and play more cards on this adventure.
Exactly, right. But the thing is, as soon as you start your adventure, you automatically start with negative 20 points. Because the idea is that you had to spend some cash to get your expedition set up to go on this adventure, right?
So you could play a 1 and a 10 and the adventure, and I'm assuming that means you're going to be out like 9
points. Okay. Right. You're going to end up with a negative 9 points for that adventure.
Cool.
So it's risk reward, right? You can lay down 2, 7, and 10 and end up with an 18 score, but minus 20, so that's actually a minus 2 to your total score. You might also start by putting down a handshake card, okay? That handshake card, if all you have down there is a handshake card and nothing else, then you don't just start with a minus 20, you start with a minus 40.
Oh.
Yeah. So then what you have to do is you have to make sure you get enough cards out there to hit 20 at least. So you got to make sure you hit at least 20. And then it gives you a multiplier, a double to any numbers above 20 that you have. All right. So, and I don't want to get into more complex detail with it, but so the way the game works is that you're both players are trying to go on this adventure by laying down these same cards, and you're both competing for the same adventures. That doesn't mean you're both working on all five. You know, you might be working on the blue and the green adventure, and I might be working on the red and the yellow adventure, and neither one of us is paying any attention to the white adventure. But on every turn, you have to either play a card on an adventure or discard one face up. Then your opponent, on his turn, he can choose to either draw a card from the deck or pick up the one that you just discarded when you put down in the discard area. So you're also saying, "Oh gosh, you're working on the green and the blue adventures. I don't want to discard any blue or green cards that you might be able to then pick up and use and get points for."
Okay.
Okay. That's kind of the idea there.
Right.
And it's real simple. I mean, you get through, you know, 4 turns and you understand it. You know, it's real simple to get the hang of, and the strategy is just diabolical. And so it was great. We had a lot of fun with that. The other thing about it is that the score variations, the score can be pretty wild. So the rules actually say you should play 3 games, and then whoever has the highest score at the end of 3 games is the winner.
Okay.
Because they know that things can get kind of crazy up and down if you're only going to play 1 game. That's the idea.
Interesting.
So I like that a lot. So I think that's going to be a definite buy for us at Gen Con this year. The other one is Dominion. And have you heard of Dominion?
Heard of it.
Okay.
I don't know anything about it, but I've heard of it.
All right. It's a deck-building game, okay? So the idea of that is that you start the game with a small number of cards. Each player has, I think it starts with 10 cards.
All right? Okay.
And in your initial deck of cards, you have cards that represent money that you can spend to buy more cards, or there are cards that give you victory points. Okay, and at the end of the game, the only way to win the game is to get victory points, and the more victory points you have at the end of the game, you're the winner. Okay, whoever has the most. All right, so you start the game, and all you have are victory points, and you have money in your hand.
Okay,
and everybody starts with 10 cards. All right, so then in the play area, you lay out I think it was 11 or 12 little mini decks of cards that have actions or powers on them. Okay, and so you lay those out. Then you also lay out 3 decks of money, so copper, silver, and gold.
Okay,
obviously gold is worth more than silver, and silver is worth more than copper. Okay, and different cards that you'll have in your play area cost more or less to buy to put into your deck. And then you have three different decks of cards that represent your victory points. And one deck is worth, each card's worth one victory point. The next deck is worth three victory points. The next deck cards are worth six victory points. Or something, again, something like that. I remember the exact numbers. Okay. So what you're doing is, as you're playing the game, you are on each turn, each hand, you draw five cards out of your starter, out of your deck, and you have those cards ready to go. And with those cards, you can spend that money to either buy more cards to add to your deck, you can play action or power cards to do something else. It might be mess with your opponents, it might be get another card, it might be who knows what, do something else, okay? Or you can buy victory points, okay?
Uh-huh.
And then as you reach the end of your deck, you reshuffle your deck and start over again, and you're drawing more cards to continue playing with.
Right. I'm giving you a funny look because this sounds exactly like the game Ascension.
Does it?
For the iPhone that a lot of people I know play.
It could be. I don't know that game. So, it could be.
Interesting. Because, yeah. I mean, it's this, you buy cards off of like a thing that everyone can buy from. You kill monsters that are out there. Mm-hmm. Your deck's done. You recycle it. It's just interesting. It sounds
okay, very,
and you can also buy. You can also get victory points. So
okay, all right. Well, yeah, it might be based on the same ideas. Yeah, I don't know.
Interesting.
So what you're doing then is, of course, you want to get as many victory points as you can, right? Because that's how you win the game. But if all you have is a deck full of victory points, then you don't have action and power cards to use against other people. You don't have a bunch of money to spend on buying other stuff.
Right.
You know, so it's a constantly trying to balance the what percentage of cards you're going to have in your deck, so that at the end of the game, when you count it all up, you have the most points. It's a real balancing act, and it was really, really interesting to play. Again, it like a lot of games, it looked like the initial setup was kind of complicated, and there's a lot to lay out to play, and understanding the basic mechanics to start with was kind of intimidating, but once we had a few rounds, it was nothing to it. Piece of cake. It was great. The other cool thing then about the game was we played it with the starter layout or starter setup or whatever. Okay, mm-hmm. With these 11 or 12 mini decks out there in play. There are so many mini decks in the box that I don't know how many, but every time you play, you can just put out a different random set of these miniature decks and play a completely different game every time, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, the base starter game, and the rulebook has layout suggestions, you know? Say, you know, your first three games, you should play with the starter setup so that it's simple and clear and there's nothing complicated or tricky, so everybody starts on an even keel.
Right.
But then after you get three or four games in, you know, why don't you move to this layout? And this setup will encourage you to fight each other a whole lot more. There's going to be a lot more attack cards that allow you to take stuff out of each other's hands and destroy things.
Oh, cool.
Okay. And then this setup is going to make it so you're going to get maybe more money. Okay. And this card is, this set is going to make you have the biggest decks you possibly can get. Okay. And so, and then for your victory points, there are some cards that say the more money you have in your deck at the end, the more victory points you're going to get, or the more cards you have in your deck, period, the more victory cards you're going to get. So by changing the incentive, it changes the entire strategy for the whole game. And it was awesome. It was great. I loved it.
Really interesting. Yeah. I would love to try that. So.
Yeah. It's a definite buy for us this year. Again, when we go to Gen Con, I can't wait to get it. I mean, I almost went down to our local game shop the next day and picked it up, but I mean, we're waiting for Gen Con. We've decided, you know. But yeah, no, and I mean, I guess there's a bunch of expansions for it too, which of course will be.
And it sounds like a game would be easy very expandable.
To do, easy to do, yeah.
Add more decks.
Right. Yeah. Add more cards.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah. So I'm. I loved it. I loved it.
Awesome.
Super fun. And I just hogged a whole lot of time. What have you been playing, Jason?
I've been playing. I had like 20 games to list, but I guess I'll just list two. No, I'm just kidding. I've been playing just a couple games. There's one game we play a lot of that I've never mentioned because it's kind of one of those guilty pleasures, because it's not like, you know, it's not like Catan or something like that. It's Mexican Train Dominoes.
So, Mexican Train Dominoes.
You've played this before, right?
No, I don't. Okay.
So it's like dominoes, right? Except for you are making a train of your own. Basically, you draw 15 tiles. face down, you flip them all over, and there's a specific number that's a starter, and you have to make a train. Basically, you have to make your own domino train on your own, right?
Okay.
The idea is to run out of tiles. So you make your train, and we play with partners. So the guy sitting across from me is on my team. So I can play on his train, he can play on mine. Your trains are either open or closed. Closed means no one can play on it except for you or your partner. Open means your opponents can play on it. It goes open if you can't play for a turn. You have to draw, and you don't draw something you can play. So it's just, it's really fun with our game group because it's a lot of strategy happening. Okay. And, you know, there's that big random element of what tile am I going to draw next?
Yeah.
And, you know, you can make the best laid plans, but it doesn't always work. And I like it because it's a game where you can make strategies for 5 or 6 turns out based on the makeup that you see on the board. And, of course, as soon as someone has to draw, that can completely go to the wind, right? And just be a waste of time that you try to figure out your strategy. But it's very competitive, and I like that. For a fun family game that, you know, you can learn how to play in about 5 minutes, because it's dominoes.
I don't even know how to play dominoes. Other than set them up and knock them over.
Well, there's that game. So dominoes, basically, you know they have pips on them, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You just have to line the pips up. Like, 5 goes to 5. And then, you know, oh, there's a 5. This one has a 5 on one side and a 2 on the other.
Okay.
So now I need a 2 to something.
All right. So
that's how dominoes work. Okay, yeah. So, and, you know, really it's screwing with each other is what it's what keeps that game interesting. So that's what I just thought I'd mention because... Because we play it a lot, but I've never mentioned it. The other one is a game that we actually got when we were on Mackinac Island a few years ago. We talked about Mackinac Island before.
Yep.
It's called Rumline. R-U-M-B. Rumline. And it is a strategic nautical game for 2 players. So the game, I showed this to you right before we started, is a mouse pad, basically.
Yeah, it looks just like a mouse pad.
Yeah, and I would gander that it is. It comes with... these pebbles, black pebbles and white pebbles, kind of like those half marble style.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to make patterns on the compass rows, because basically the whole board game is just a compass rows. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to go back and forth, you know, and you're trying to make these patterns, and your opponent's trying to screw with you while you do that. And what's cool is, I mean, it's like tic-tac, like think about tic-tac-toe, right? If you have 2 players playing tic-tac-toe that are not children... or idiots.
Yeah.
No one ever wins tic-tac-toe, right?
Right.
Because I see what your next move is, and I block it. So unless you do something tricky, that's pretty much the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this game, so that's the case. I mean, if I make one move, my wife who's playing with me knows to just block the spot. So what that ends up meaning is you kind of do like a scatter and splatter pattern, right? Like you're putting a dot here, you're putting a dot over to the side, and you are attempting to make the pattern without letting your opponent know that's what you're doing. And then you'll get to a point where now, boom, I can make 2 patterns. You have to block one. And then you'll block one, and you're going to get the other, you know?
Got it. Okay.
And each pattern is worth a different set of points. There's like 4 different patterns based on how difficult they are to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the higher difficulty, the more points they are. So you can have a 40.1 or a 20.1, and your opponent needs to try and stop you from making one or the other.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. So it's a fun game. It's there's no randomness in it at all. It's what you would call a perfect information game, a la chess. So I thought, for Mechanic of the Week...
Yeah, sure.
We could just roll into that. I thought about talking about perfect information games... I know that's not specifically a mechanic, but it's a type of game.
Okay.
Like I said, like a chess or a checkers. So
can you define that more clearly?
Yeah. So perfect information is the idea that you can completely control all of your actions and there is no randomness whatsoever, other than that provided by your opponent who has the exact same ability you do.
So there's no die to roll. There's no deck of cards to shuffle.
Correct.
There's no spinner to spin.
Right.
It is 100% based on your decisions.
Yes.
And your opponent's decisions.
Correct.
Okay.
So, obviously, the best example is chess.
Right.
Because, you know,
yeah.
Checkers, another solid example.
Right. Everybody always starts with the same setup and the exact same pieces.
Right.
And, okay.
Rumline. Not that good of an example because most people haven't heard of it. What's cool about those games are, right, if you lose, you've lost for one of 2 reasons. A, you're terrible at it.
Yeah.
B, your opponent is phenomenal, right? Or C, I guess, you're both terrible and your opponent just happened to be slightly less terrible than you. Right? But...
Or D, you're both bad and your opponent just happened to be less bad than you.
That's what or, I just said. That was C. C well, point C.
Well, no, but you said C was better than you. I would say less bad than you.
Oh.
That's, you know, that's the difference. And then E would be if what if you're both drunk and aren't really paying attention?
Then that is not the game to be playing. Randomness is your friend in that game.
Okay.
So, strategy-wise,
yeah.
I mean, it's like the perfect strategy, right?
Yeah.
Because there is literally nothing to stop you from just being Mr. Strategy.
Right.
But, you know, when I think about those games, and not that this game's not fun. I mean, it's fun. I mean, we played it 3 times in a row, and it was like, all right, we're done for a few months. We'll bring it out later.
Mm-hmm.
But... It's like that random element. It really adds gameplay fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's funny is when I played competitive games in the past, like actually competitively,
mm-hmm.
The random element is what you hated, right?
Because
I was confident that I practiced these games a lot, like these miniature war games. I played them more than my opponent likely. Mm-hmm. That's what we did.
Yeah.
And it would be frustrating when the roll of a D20 would make me lose,
ruins
right?
It. Yeah.
Though I had a friend, Brad, who he taught me how to play a lot of these games, and he would always say that if you lost, if you found yourself in a position to where one roll made you or lost the game,
then you already lost.
You put yourself okay. in that position of having the bad choice.
Sure.
So he always argued that randomness had very little to do with a game like that.
Okay.
So, you know, I think there are varying degrees, right?
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, if you roll a D20 for some things,
mm-hmm.
but other things are automatic, and a lot of it has to do with strategy and skill, you know? Mm-hmm. Magic the Gathering is a good example of that, where there's a limited amount of randomness, right?
Yeah.
The randomness is sure. which card you're going to draw. But right. you pick the cards that are in your deck,
yeah.
and there's what your opponent did, which shouldn't count because... Again, in a perfect information game, your opponent still is doing things you don't necessarily expect.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, I don't know if I'm making an argument for or against them. I think kind of against, right? I mean...
No. I think what you're arguing for is that you understand what game you're choosing to play at any given time, and you make that decision about what you want to play at the time.
I guess that's fair.
Because, I'll tell you, because... my wife and I used to play a lot of chess, and I was better at chess than she was. And it's not because I'm smarter or I'm a better chess... Well, maybe it's because I'm a better chess player, but that's not indicative of me having some greater IQ or more experience or something. What it means is that I'm... In a game of chess, I am just a little bit better at planning ahead and trying to... guess what she might do. Okay. I guess I'm a little more forward thinking.
Okay.
Okay. In a game of chess. But that hurts me in a lot of random games or games that have random factors, because I think I said before that my wife generally slaughters me in every other game we play.
Right.
You know, 70% of the time she will destroy me in any other game we play. And the reason for that is that I am always looking far ahead, trying to plan out into the future. And she seems to be just kind of looking at this turn and the next turn, you know? What's the quick payoff? Quick payoff, quick payoff, quick payoff. And I'm always looking at the long-term payoff down the road, and I so often get boned, you know? And I lose that. She does something in the short term that messes me up for the long term. And I can't not do that, is the thing. We actually have another perfect information game that we got a couple years ago. It's by Twilight Creations, the same people who did that Gravediggers game.
Okay.
It's called Easter Island.
Yeah, I've seen that game before.
Yeah. It was another one that was like $5 or $10, you know, real cheap. And the idea on that one is that you are some alien race and you are placing the statues on Easter Island. and the game board is just a grid, okay, just a square grid. With little nodes on it, and you can place your Easter Island figures, because they're actual little plastic Easter Island figures in there, the nice. Statues. You place them on a node, okay? You take turns placing them on the node. You can also then, you have these little sun tokens. And if you can, you can then put these little sun tokens on the border around the grid, all right? And then the game is played by turning and moving your Easter Island guys. And the way that works is that if you turn a guy the right way, and then you flip over a sun token next to him, the sunlight will shine a beam of light into his ear,
mm-hmm.
and then it will shoot out his eyes.
Like lasers,
right. That's the idea. That's the fantasy idea of this, okay?
I love that.
And what you're trying to do then is you're trying to destroy your opponent's statues by shooting lasers out of the eyes of your statues. But the thing is that you can only kill somebody if you can hit them from behind. All right?
Okay.
So what you can do is you can set up a chain reaction. So you can have the sunlight shooting into the ear of Statue 1 and out the eyes of Statue 1, and then that will shoot into the ear of Statue 2. And Statue 2 is looking at a 90-degree angle to Statue 1. And then that laser will continue. It's almost like 45-degree angle mirrors, right?
Right. Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, and so what you can do is you can send, if you can set it up right, you can send that laser beam across the board at a bunch of different angles and you know, whip it all the way around the board to try and get to your opponent. But your opponent, of course, has the same number of pieces, the same number of sun tokens.
Right.
So the same thing, what you're trying to do is you're trying to trap them in two different ways so you get them to a point where they don't have a choice. They have to pick either that guy's going to die or that guy's going to die. And what you're hoping is you can do that far enough, long enough until you win the game, you know? And again, I usually win that too because I'm looking forward a whole lot more turns than she is.
Right.
So yeah, perfect information game, I guess.
Yeah. So I just thought that was kind of a cool topic.
It is, yeah.
And I struggle to think how to design a perfect information game just because,
mm-hmm.
you know, it just seems difficult because that randomness element, I mean, if you're going to involve any cards, any dice, I mean, any of the normal stuff that you mm-hmm. would throw into a game, you have just destroyed the chance of having that type of game. So
yeah.
The Easter Island one is cool, though, because it's kind of a different... I mean, it feels like a full-on game. Like, this Rumline game is fun, but, I mean, it feels like you're placing, you know, pebbles on a mouse pad, right? Mm-hmm. It's not... But, like, a game like that, I mean, that feels really legit, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, it does. I mean, it's the production quality is not the best, you know, but that said, I mean, still, it's a neat game. We don't play it a ton. It's the kind of thing where sometimes we just feel like, hey, let's be 100% strategic with each other, you know?
Or do you feel like, you're like, but honey, I haven't won a game in forever.
Sometimes there's that too, yeah. Baby, I haven't won in like a month. Can we play Easter Island? Okay.
It'd be funny if she beats you sometime.
It's not that she's never beaten me. It's just I beat her far more often. I would say with that game and with chess, it's probably more like I win 70% of the time.
Right.
Yeah. Right. No.
And my wife hates chess, but it's funny though because repetitive play and learning the strategies can obviously help too. Because I remember mm-hmm. her brother, who I would play chess with a lot. You know, he let's play chess. You know, and I would whip him every time. And then one day he says, "Hey, you want to play chess?" And I said, "Yeah." And he's like 12,
mm-hmm.
so I feel pretty good.
And you were how old?
20-something. So yeah, all right.
So you had it in the bag.
Right. So we sit down, and we start to play, and boom, checkmate, like six turns in. Like, so I was like, wow, okay, let's play again. Same thing. Yeah. I make different moves, same thing. Apparently that's called the classic trap. Like,
yeah. Well,
so, and he had been playing chess with this chess teacher at school who taught him that one move.
Yeah.
So I watched how he did it,
uh-huh.
and he never beat me again. But you know, in that, it's just funny because, you know, you learn a couple tricks and ta-da, and turns out.
Yeah.
Othello.
Oh, yeah, that's of course. One. Right. So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to think of other ones. A lot of those real classic games are that way.
Right. I have a game I've never played. I think it's called Armada.
Okay.
I could be wrong. But I think it's called Armada. If it's called something else, I'll link it either way. But that game, it's about trade routes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So And it's, there's no, you know, there's no randomness to the game at all. So, okay. Trying to remember, I think the, if those rail games are or not.
I think you'd mentioned that once before and weren't sure. If there's no dice rolling or anything?
I don't know. I just know you draw with stuff with crayons. We'll find out at Gen Con, because Jeannie, one of the people who we'll be there with, she loves the rail games.
So. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, I guess I could also just link in the show notes. It's not like this is live right now. You're listening live from Poorly Designed Studios.
No, you're not.
No, no, you're not. Not even close. It's been like 2 weeks since we recorded this.
Yeah.
At minimum. So.
I think it will be about 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, about 2 weeks, yeah.
Yep.
It's yeah.
Exciting.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so Perfect Information. Yeah.
That's all I got.
Okay.
So,
good topic.
Thanks.
Yeah.
You're. We actually thought of a bunch of games to support it. I'm actually impressed.
I am too, yeah.
That tends to be our weakness, without right. saying the same games over and over again.
Without saying Sentinels of the Multiverse again.
Yes.
Hey, got it into the
there episode. It is. Oh. This show's like 6 degrees of Sentinels of the Multiverse, except for it's like 1 degree. Zero, actually.
Zero, because yeah. we say it on the show. Yeah.
Eventually, one of those guys is going to accidentally listen to it and hear us say, we always mention that game, and they're going to be like, really? And they're going to ask us to stop. I'm just kidding.
I hope not. I wish they would come on our show.
You would cry if they did that.
We should ask them sometime.
We'll see them at Gen Con.
Oh, yes. Yes, we want Again. To see them.
Yeah.
Yeah, we listeners.
Saw them last year.
Yeah, our hope, our dream, our goal is, if you heard us talking to Chris from Dice Hate Me the other week, you probably heard us mention that we're going to try and get a roundtable discussion going at Gen Con. We want to record a couple shows while we're there in the hotel room. And so hopefully, if there are any game designers out there who are listening to this, but just in case, we would love it if you guys could hang out with us, and we should try and get the guys from Sentinels to come up to the room and have a few beers with us and chat.
That, by the way, was my new plan.
Was
we'll
it?
Get alcohol, and we'll offer them free alcohol to come record the podcast.
That was a given, I thought.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is well, it? Yeah, it is now. Yeah.
yeah.
It was my plan, and then you agreed with it.
Come on, guys. Let's have a beer. We can record you while you're drinking, too. Ha ha. You know?
Yeah,
loose lips sink ships.
And I think we'll do. I think we get some game designers, some players. You know, just some mm-hmm. some people who are knowledgeable and just kind of have a fun discussion about.
Yeah.
And we'll do it in a couple parts. Hopefully, you know, like you said, we'll get two episodes out of it. Mm-hmm. Is the idea. And speaking of that, our next episode you're going to hear next week, that is going to be a Gen Con preview.
No, that will be the next episode yeah. after.
That's the one after the episode after the next, the Friday after next.
This is episode 9. Next one is 10. Episode 11 is going to be our Gen Con pre-show special.
See, what we need in this room here, in the studio, if uh-huh. you will, is a big whiteboard.
A big whiteboard?
That we can write that on. If I bring a whiteboard over, will you hang it up?
Well, what pictures would I take down?
Right back there. There's nothing right back there.
Oh, that's a perfect place for a big whiteboard. Yes, indeed.
I'll bring one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I have an extra one at home.
Do you?
So.
Done.
I don't know why.
Deal.
Sweet. Good news, listeners. Soon, we will know which episodes we're talking about when we're talking about them. Rob actually already always seems to.
Yeah.
It's really for my reference. But we'll feel important for having a big mm-hmm. big whiteboard. So.
We'll feel professional.
Yes. You know what we should talk about? We should talk about your game pitch.
Wait, what?
Yeah. It's
what?
Your week to pitch a game.
It is, isn't it?
It'd be embarrassing if it was actually my week and I just said that. After
no.
I just said, next episode. And you're like, actually, no, moron. It's the one after that.
Yeah. No, I'm pretending. I know. I'm ready. Yeah.
All right, well, hey, practicing the pitch.
Hey, practicing the pitch. All right. The game I'm going to pitch today, I actually mentioned it in episode 6. I mentioned the name of it just briefly, and now it's my chance to get back to that idea. The game that I'm going to pitch is called Damsels in Distress. And Jason made a funny face.
I was saying it with you as you said it.
Uh-huh.
Because as you're about to explain, I know of this game already.
It's true, yeah. We this game idea I've been working on for several weeks now, actually. But well, here's the idea, and then we'll talk about where I am with it. The idea is kind of inspired by old melodrama, silent movies, and Dudley Do-Right kind of stuff, where the evil villain is always catching the fair maiden and tying her up on the train tracks, or tying her to a stake and setting it on fire, and the slightly stupid but honorable hero has to come save her anyway, always in the nick of time, just at the last second he saves her before she before certain death, before she plummets to her grave or gets hit by the train or the TNT explodes or something like that. So it's a game where the players play as the hero trying to save the damsel. But there's not just one damsel, because the villain in this game, he's a real jerk. So he's putting like 4 and 5 and 6 damsels in distress at the same time. So what we've got here is we've got the players are scrambling all at the same time to rescue these damsels before they hit the ground or they explode or they're eaten by the lions or something like that. So the way it works is you have 3 sets of cards, okay? You have the hero cards, and there's 7 cards per hero, okay? And each of the hero has 7 different move cards. And I'll get back to the specifics of that in a second. But the idea is that the heroes, all 4 heroes start with the same 7 move cards that they can use to run and rescue the damsels. Okay, then you have the deck of damsel cards, and these damsels are worth different point values. Okay, some are worth 2 points, and some are worth 4 points, and some are worth 8, and some are worth 10 points. Okay, and then you have a deck of dangers. And each danger has a countdown on it. The countdown means how many turns until that danger goes off or triggers. I like to use the term trigger for this. So what you do is you lay out a danger card, and then you lay a damsel card down on top of it. And every turn, so every time you go from player 1 to player 2 or player 2 to player 3, you advance all of those damsels down the countdown by 1. So if you have Penelope and she is stuck in quicksand, okay, quicksand is slow, so it has a countdown, I think, of 4. I think it has 6 or 8 countdown, okay? So you set that up, and it starts with 8 turns to go. And then I do something, and I don't help Penelope, so the turn advances to Jason. And before Jason can do anything, that countdown slides down to 7. And if he gets all the way around where that counts down to 0 and nobody does anything to save her, she drowns in the quicksand and dies.
Bummer.
And whoever's turn it is when that happens, they have to take her card and they turn it over and she's dead. And so rather than getting points for saving Penelope, they lose points for letting Penelope die on their watch. Okay, so the move cards, the hero move cards, each move card has an advanced number or a retract number, okay? So if you have a run card, your run is a +3. So that means you can advance the damsel by 3 turns. You might have the jump card, and the jump card lets you advance the damsel by 2 turns, closer to the trigger. You might have a dodge card. The dodge card actually has a -1, which allows you to make that damsel retreat by 1, or the countdown reverses by 1. So it takes it from a 2 back up to a 3. Okay, so that delays her imminent death. And the goal is, by laying down these cards, that you can advance 1 or more damsels in your turn down to 0. Now, if you just let them get to 0 on their own, well, they die. But if you, as the hero, are running and jumping and dodging and weaving and using your mad skills to get them to 0, that means you, as the hero, are saving that damsel in the nick of time, just as the countdown reaches 0. You're leaping in there to save him. Then you get to take that damsel as a saved damsel, and you get points for her at the end of the game. Okay. Now, the other thing about it is that you all have those same 7 move cards. On your turn, You have to play 3 of your 7 cards. And it must be 3 of those 7. Then in your next turn, the 3 you just played are no longer available. You have to set those aside, and you have to pick from the remaining 4.
Okay.
That's the idea.
Right.
All right. So on turn 2, you have to play 3 of the 4 remaining. All right. On your third turn, you've only got 1 card left in your hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
That 7th card. You have to use that 7th card on this turn.
Okay.
And then you have 3 cards left from your original turn, and then you can pick 2 more from that 3. So the game is forcing you to always be cycling through all of your moves.
Cool.
Cool.
You have to use all seven moves before you're going to be able to go back and reuse the old moves again.
Makes sense.
So it's forcing you then to be strategic in how you allocate those moves. Because when you have six damsels out there and they're all at a countdown of one, who are you going to save, who are you going to let die?
Because you can't split the cards, correct?
You can't split the cards, right, exactly. So if your run card is a +3, you can't use that as 1-1-1. You have to use all three of those moves on one damsel.
Right.
Right, okay. And one thing that I'm toying with, of course, is giving maybe every all heroes six identical cards, and then every hero also has their seventh card as a special move. It's unique to them. Still working on nailing down the figures, the details on that.
Like a signature move?
A signature move, exactly, right. Likewise, then, with the dangers, my thinking is that if any of the dangers actually trigger, they count down to zero on their own, and the damsel dies, there is probably going to be some kind of a trigger event. So, you know, if the volcano explodes, it doesn't just kill that damsel, it kills every other damsel out there in play, because it's a big erupting volcano.
Right.
That's terrible. If the quicksand goes down to zero and that damsel dies, it's quicksand. It sucks people in. So it's also going to pull the damsel next to it over to its card at the same countdown level that it used to be on.
Okay.
And then you put a new damsel on top of the
cool.
empty danger.
Yeah, that keeps it really cool.
Right. So each danger, I'm thinking, will have its own unique trigger action. So if that damsel dies, obviously it won't trigger if you save the damsel, but if that damsel dies, then that consequence triggers, and it can hurt you or it can hurt other people, other heroes that are playing the game. So that's the idea. What I want to do also is alternative play styles, because I'm talking about this in terms of a competitive four-player game. I also want to make sure I can balance it so you can have a four-player co-op game.
Yep.
And that idea would be that you need to try and save as many damsels as possible. Or maybe the goal of co-op game is to save all of the damsels.
Like when a damsel dies, you lose.
Game's over, you right. all lose, right. And I'm also hoping that I can balance it to make it a viable single-player solitaire game so that you can try and run the deck as one player and try and save all the damsels as a solitaire game.
That seems pretty doable with that game.
I think I can make that work, and that'll take a lot of testing. The other thought that I had is that I might be able to put in a villain option where the villain might also... You could have three heroes and one villain. And so the villain is trying to push the damsels down to death. You know? And so it could be three against one. So that's okay. Another thing that... Once I get all these other mechanics nailed down, I want to explore that idea as well, which could be fun. And of course, then that lead makes you think, well, could you also just do four villains? I don't know if that makes as much sense, but it's something to investigate, you know?
Yeah.
It's something worth looking into to see if we can make that work.
Yeah, I mean, you could almost do... you could do three villains and one hero.
Sure.
Or any combination thereof.
Yeah, right, right.
So if you wanted to have two on two, you could have two villains, two heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Something also just to think of for the solo mode might be, if it doesn't balance well with just one hero, have the person playing solitaire run two heroes. To
yeah.
kind of bounce off each other.
Sure, that'd be an easy option too.
And it actually makes it more difficult. It makes it easier and more difficult at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because now you have two cards you're forced to play on that seventh turn,
yeah.
you know, that seventh laydown.
Yeah.
But you also, you know, have more cards, mm-hmm. so.
Yeah, so I really like this idea a lot. I've been having a lot of fun exploring it. The thing is that we haven't been entirely honest with all of our listeners here because Jason and I have been developing stuff on our own. Part of this idea, of course, was to develop all this stuff in public, but obviously we're still thinking about this stuff when the microphone's off. So to be honest with you, I've actually already done a mock-up of the game because I'm pretty sure that this is going to be the first project that I'm really going to pursue seriously. So I've already done a mock-up deck.
I had no idea. I feel so betrayed. I quit thinking when the microphone turns off.
Right. Really?
Right.
Loser. You know that very well because we play tested it together.
We did. And the reason we did that, listeners, we're not trying to deceive you. Honestly, the reason we did that is because we feel like playtesting is something we need to learn more about.
Yeah.
It was an eye-opening experience.
It certainly was.
So we thought that, you know, we both kind of took our best ideas we thought we had at this point, and I'll talk about mine on the next episode.
Sure.
Not the Gen Con episode. So I'm not trying to steal your thunder here. I just want to kind of explain, you know, why we decided to do a playtest. We just thought, and you don't just, I mean, also, in addition to best ideas, quote, best ideas that we had, these also seem the most feasible to make a playtest deck for. Because mine's a card game as well, so it's a little easier than if we were trying to make a playtest of a huge board game, you know, with a bunch of stuff. So, all right, playtest away.
So, yeah, so what I did is I started out by, you know, I didn't know how many cards I was going to need, of course. You know, I don't know how many damsels, how many dangers. I was pretty sure on 7 move cards for the heroes, but... You know, let's see how that all balances out. I also wanted to have some ideas how many cards would be in the deck so that I have some idea on printing costs, you know? So I started out by just making an Excel spreadsheet and listing. First, I broke it down between hero cards, damsels, and dangers. And I said, let's say we have a 100-card deck. How would that break down with 7 cards per hero? How many do I have left for damsels and dangers? What I ended up doing is that 100 cards was too much. It was too much. So I took it down to a 72-card deck, which I think is kind of the next step down for standard deck size.
Yep.
Yeah. That was much, much better. So then again, I said, well, do I want the equal number of damsels as dangers? Well, that ended up being kind of silly because... In that way, after working out the numbers and that, I felt like I didn't have enough damsels and I had too many dangers. So I ended up settling on 25 damsels and 15 dangers.
Okay.
And that way, once in every game, of course, you're going to run out of dangers and you're going to have to reshuffle.
Right.
But that's okay. It's okay to cycle through those dangers a second time. Because most of them certainly aren't going to trigger when you're playing because you're saving those damsels.
Right.
And it's neat to say, man, we dodged that volcano, except, oh no, here it comes again. You know, adds that little bit of aspect into it. And then also, by having more damsels, it drew the game out a little farther. It had a wider range of point values, but also more of each card that are worth a certain point value. So that kind of forced you to think more about it.
Right.
Yeah, at any rate. Okay, so after I felt pretty confident about how many of each card type I was going to have, I moved on to actual values. You know, how many points are the damsels worth? How many turns are the hero move cards going to advance each danger by? How long should those danger countdowns be? And in that case, I really just kind of guessed. I just picked some numbers and threw it in there and said, well, we'll see how it goes. Okay. And then from there, I cut a bunch of cards out of cardstock and wrote some simple stuff on them with Sharpies, and it worked really well. It was great. And so then we got together, and it was the two of us and our wives. So we played a 4-player game.
Yep.
And actually, before that, my wife and I played a 2-player game, and it was okay. But I was a little worried that it might be kind of boring. And then we got together and we played the 4-player game, and it was really boring.
Well,
I thought it was really boring.
I thought it was fun, and you know, Steph thought it was fun too. Steph is my wife, to be clear. What we noticed, and the first thing I said to you when we finished was, this is way too easy.
Way too easy.
Which I think is what you're equating as boring.
Which is why it was boring. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So the really valuable thing that came out of that is understanding, well, number one, these countdowns for these dangers are way too long.
You had countdowns up to like 12?
Up to 12, yeah.
Yeah. So it was like, we'll see that in 12 turns.
Right. And the lowest one, I think, was 6.
Right.
You know? So it felt like there was no urgency, there was no danger in that, and so in coming back then revising, I have some as low as 2, and I think the highest countdown is 8.
That's good.
And I think that's much better for me, with the sweet spot being 4 or 5, I believe.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Likewise with the damsels, there was too wide of a point spread for them.
I remember that.
I had some that were 2 and some that were 20.
And you won the game by like 30 points.
Yeah, and I don't want that to happen.
Right.
You know, you don't want it to be... You don't want to get halfway through the game and be able to say, oh, well, there's no way we can catch up with Rob.
Right. Well, what was bad about it was you got less cards than your wife.
Right.
And you beat her by 20 plus points. I mean, it was like murdering, you know.
Yeah, it was terrible.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so I had to squash all those point values back down. To make a tighter range and lower range.
Right.
To make it a more competitive experience. So going back through and rebalancing that stuff, that again, I went back to my spreadsheet, and because I did it all in spreadsheet and I had formulas in there in Excel to give me totals and counts and things, it made rebalancing that stuff go really well. So actually I was really happy with using Excel. It just simple, you know, auto sum formulas in that too, right? I really was happy with using Excel for laying that out. It helped me stay organized, and it made it really easy to go back and change one thing at a time. So I would really recommend that actually to somebody in the future. So since then, it's been about a week and a half since, almost 2 weeks since
about
we
2 weeks since we
play yeah tested. Since we play tested that, and of course I was on vacation all last week doing family stuff, so I haven't had a chance to actually make new cards yet, but I'm in good shape to do that again now.
Well, it's kind of nice to let it simmer. I know I haven't done any work on my game, and we got just as much valuable feedback on that, and it's kind of like just letting it sit and thinking through the issues we had, and you know, and so we'll go into detail on that next time. So.
Yeah. But I'm really happy about it. I think the next playtest will give me a better idea as to whether this is a viable idea or not, because I think we've nailed down some specifics that should make it more fun.
Right.
But if it's still not a lot of fun, I'm just going to ditch it and move on to something else.
Right. And
no harm done.
I think I think it's some card stack wasted, but
yeah, whatever. Yeah. It's cheap.
My time wasted, but
you're
not cheap.
It's on Jimmy.
No, it felt like a viable idea. You know, when we were playing it, it felt like a real game. It just felt like a really easy game, right? But like the concept, you know, we talked about how we're looking at cards with Sharpies written on them, right?
And yeah.
It's kind of lame when you're doing that. And that's tough because so much about this game would be fun because of the artwork.
Yeah,
so,
you know, that's...
So yeah, so that was a detriment to it, but it seemed like it wanted to be a fun game.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And like with a couple tweaks, it could be.
Because
I remember saying to you, you had like damsels worth 2 points,
mm-hmm.
and there would be like four damsels out, and they were all worth 2 points. And I was like, I don't even want to save any of these damsels
because
they're worth 2 points, and you just
who
got
cares?
20.
Right.
So yeah, kind of finding that mean of point values and balancing
right, to
that
make it worth it. Yeah.
You know,
another thing about that is that, you know, originally my original thought was that when three damsels die, the game's over because you're heroes and you're trying to save everybody. But in playing it, we decided that we didn't care. We were letting damsels die because 2 points, who cares? And we let three of them die real fast. And so we changed our mind. So, well, then, you know, rather than cutting off when a certain number die, let's just finish the deck, you know. It's not going to take that long. It's easy to get to. What's the point of cutting it off, really, if it doesn't make any sense? Likewise, then we said, you know, we're letting these girls die because we don't care about losing 2 points. What if those 2 points counted against you? Or what if those 8 points counted against you? So that was the other big revelation for me in gameplay, was to make dead damsels hurt you and count against you. And if you're playing a competitive game, then you can also try and set damsels up to die on the next turn.
Yep.
To screw your opponents.
Or screw them with triggering effects. I mean,
yeah,
you know...
Right.
Because, I mean, if you could screw somebody, say, with a volcano that's going to kill every damsel...
Right.
Right?
Right.
That's really bad for your
it
next
is.
Player.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that, you know, I think that it is... I think it is a fun game. It just... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it needs these tweaks. And the tweaks you're saying, having played the game, I'm very excited about.
Yeah.
I think... In my opinion, the things that are going to add the most to it
mm-hmm.
are the triggers, having special events.
Yep.
Because that means the triggers more than a different picture and a different countdown.
Yeah.
And especially since you've kind of truncated the countdowns, you know, the volcano was 12 before, that's what set it apart. It's a volcano and it's 12.
Yeah.
But now if the volcano is 4 and so is 50% of the deck, something has to set it apart.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, if you've got... Plus, you know, being able to have that strategy of, can I screw the next person? Or,
mm-hmm.
ooh, if I save this damsel, this will happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or if I let her die, this will happen. You know, so it's just, I think that there's a lot that can be done with the game. And I'm really excited to try it again. Super excited. And so is my wife.
Yeah,
so.
Okay. Well, that's nice to hear. Yeah, I am too. The other thing that I was thinking about as I was doing that was to start simple. Start with real simple, basic mechanics. And I didn't plan for this in advance, but now that it's happening, I'm glad that it happened this way, that the basic function of the game is still real simple and real easy and real clear.
Yep.
And the complexity and strategy is going to come in from the specific card text.
Yep.
And by adding one small layer at a time of stuff onto the basic structure, I think is going to work well, and I'm glad that it's growing in that way. So, anyway, yeah. damsels in distress, heroes trying to save damsels that are just crazy, always in danger, because of that stupid jerkhead villain. I still need to think of a good villain name.
You do.
I mean...
Baron Von something.
Yeah, Snidely Whiplash is the bad guy in Dudley Do-Right, and that is one of my favorite bad guy names of all time.
Yeah.
It's just Snidely
Whiplash. I mean,
yeah,
it's Snide, great. Right there, you know?
Right. Whiplash. And he's got the sharp nose, and he's got the big...
Yeah, he's got the big long mustache. Right. Yeah. It's a handlebar mustache, right? But it's like...
It curls up. Yeah. The handlebars will go down. It curls up.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
When you see cowboys with a big mustache and it twirls around, you don't call that a handlebar mustache?
Well, handlebar has big handlebars that go down.
That's a Fu Manchu.
No, Fu Manchu goes really long down. Handlebar is like what Senior from American Chopper has. He has big handlebars.
That's called handlebars.
Yeah.
So what do you call it again? Mustache you're referring to?
Well, it's real thin, so I guess a real thin one alone would be a pencil mustache with the big curls on it. I don't know what the name for that would be, but...
Interesting. Things that we decide to talk about on this show.
We're way over time, though. I've gone way too long talking about my stuff.
Oh, long show.
So we should probably wrap up here, move on to plugs. What do you have to plug tonight?
Tonight I would like to plug Dragon Chow Dice Bags.
Oh, Dragon Chow.
I said it right this time.
You and I didn't.
I normally screw it up because I'm just bad with fast words.
Yeah.
So Dragon Chow Dice Bags, made by Geeky Lindsay on Twitter. She does a lot of really great nerdy designs. Mm-hmm. They're very geeky and they're awesome. Mm-hmm. Some of the highlights, she has one that's it says the British Blue Police Box, but that's the TARDIS, right?
Yep.
From Doctor Who. Yep. She also has one that is the same design as Will Wheaton's sweater was from Next Generation, that striped sweater.
Oh, yeah, so great. Yeah, I saw that one.
She also has one that I think she had somebody give to Will Wheaton that says, don't be a dick on it.
Oh, yeah?
So, nice. Yeah, so she makes cool designs. A lot of people use them for Kickstarter and stuff. And so it's just dragonchow.com.
Okay.
Highly recommend it. They're just super cool. And they're very, very well priced.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not that expensive. And they're handmade and stuff. Handmade in Canada.
Oh, she's
Canadian. Home of the Maple Leaf. She's Canadian, yes.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if she's actually Canadian because I don't know her personally. But she lives in Canada.
Okay.
So...
Good.
You want to plug something?
Yeah, just real quick. If anybody out there is into video games, because obviously I'm into video games. I wanted to give GiantBomb.com a quick mention. It's a video games website. You know, they're reviewers and they do videos and things. I think they're part of the GameSpot. GameSpot family now.
Okay.
But it's great because... Because they don't feel like they have to review everything. You know, a lot of those websites, GameSpot is one of them, IGN is one of them. You know, every game that comes out, they feel like they have to play and review because they owe it to the audience. These guys don't care. You know, they're like, we're only going to play the games that we think are interesting or cool. And then we will review the ones that we want to if we feel like it's worth spending our time on.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's great. It's real casual. It's comfortable. They have a great podcast, which is the Giant Bombcast. The podcast is fantastic. It's five guys, and they just hang out in a room for 2 or 3 hours at a time. You just talk about what games they've been playing for the week, what stuff's coming out that week, news in the industry, that kind of stuff. And you can tell that all these guys have been in the video games industry for anywhere from 10 to 20 years, each one of them. Their knowledge of the industry and of the games, the history of games is encyclopedic. It's crazy. They're really funny guys. They're normal people. You know, it's not as heavily overproduced kind of thing. It's just guys hanging out, chatting, kind of like we are. You know, but they're a lot better at it than we are.
Except for they're cooler and better at it.
Right, and they have a lot more listeners than we do.
So GiantBomb.com, check it out.
Yeah, but no, it's great. They my favorite things they do on their website is, you know, they do a lot of videos, and one thing they do is they do quick looks where they'll get a game that's coming out this week or they'll get a pre-release copy of the game, you know, because they're journalists, so they get pre-release stuff, and they'll do gameplay, they'll record video gameplay of them playing the game. And so you'll be watching the video of just their screen, playing the game, and you can hear the game audio, but it's also two or three guys on microphones just talking to each other about the game while they're playing it. And they're called quick looks, but the number one definition of it being quick look is that it'd be at least 20 minutes long.
Nice.
So these guys are super funny and charismatic and easy to listen to. I should say, not talk, I never talk. Easy to listen to. You can tell they know what they're doing. They have smart stuff to say. And with their quick looks, you get a sense of what this game's like. It's not just a trailer. It's not just, you know, quick, you know, 1 minute long gameplay teaser. It's these guys are playing the actual game that you're going to sit down and play, and you get a real picture of whether that's going to be awesome or crappy. And I mean, some of the quick looks are up like two hours long sometimes. Wow. Yeah, it's great. I really like it a lot.
Awesome.
So, GiantBomb.com, highly recommended if you want to learn more about video game, Vidya games.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else tonight?
No, I think we're good.
Okay, we went way long, so we apologize for that.
If you're still listening.
If you're still listening, if you haven't given up on us. I guess that's it for us. We'd like to thank everyone for listening to Building the Game. Check out our website at buildingthegamepodcast.com and leave us some comments. Send us an email at buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter with @podcastbtg. We would also love it if you could log into iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, pretty please. And please come back and join us every week as we share our new ideas and what we've learned as we go on this crazy journey of becoming game designers. Take it easy, man.
Take it easy.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Got some static still happening.
Do you really? Have you noticed that in the past?
Oh, I have noticed that in the past. Yep, there it is again.
It's something about this connection then.
Is it not in tight? That's what she said.
So it's something
probably
about,
just our crappy connections on
it's
this.
It's got to be our headphones, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me hang this thing up here.
I mean, yours are nicer than mine, I think, and yours aren't like anything super fancy.
So no.
Like you have the Beats audio or something.
Right.
You're idiots.
Okay, ready to go?